messed up tonight. Ignoring everybody. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Open Language. I'm Diana.
And I'm Adam.
So today we've got an advanced lesson for you guys, and we are continuing our book reading series.
That's right. Today we are talking about a book called The Power of Habit.
Now, this book was written by Charles Duhigg, who is a Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter for the New York Times.
That's right. And just like some other books in our book series, one lesson really isn't enough to cover it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to break it up into two parts. Today, we're just going to talk about some kind of nice quotes from the book.
Right. So we're just going to introduce the concept of habits.
Right. And next time, we'll talk about actual concrete steps to, you know, form new habits or healthier habits, I guess we could say.
Right. So this lesson, as usual, is going to be broken into two parts. So let's go ahead and listen to the first part.
Sounds lovely.
Habits are powerful but delicate. They can emerge outside our consciousness or can be deliberately designed. They often occur without our permission but can be reshaped by fiddling with their parts. They shape our lives far more than we realize. They are so strong, in fact, that they cause our brains to cling to them at the exclusion of all else, including common sense. Habits, scientists say, emerge because the brain is constantly looking for ways to save effort. If you want to do something that requires willpower, like going for a run after work, you have to conserve your willpower muscle during the day. So the first quote we have here starts with, "Habits are powerful but delicate."
Delicate, okay. Just like me.
So what does that mean?
Well, you know, delicate means kind of, well, not very strong, kind of weak.
I would say easily broken, right?
Easily broken, yes.
Now, habits can emerge outside our consciousness or can be deliberately designed.
Okay, so consciousness, this is a huge, huge topic,
mm-hmm.
which we are going to not talk about for very long, right?
So consciousness is basically awareness.
Yeah, we are all conscious beings, meaning that we all have consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
We are aware of ourselves and of the world.
Yes. Now, there are a lot of different words that are related to conscious. For example, unconscious.
Ah, yes.
Or subconscious.
Subconscious.
Mm-hmm. When you are unconscious, it means that you are not aware of your surroundings because either you fainted or you're asleep.
You're asleep.
Or maybe you, passed out.
You passed out, sure. Well, we even have a phrase, to be knocked unconscious,
yes.
right? Like someone hits you in the head and then you just kind of lose consciousness.
Exactly. Now, your subconscious is basically going to be like underlying feelings that you might not be exactly aware of,
right?
But they kind of show themselves through, you know, little ways.
Right. Like, why do I want to kill my father so much and, you know, hug my mother? Why is that?
Oh, I think I know what you're talking about there. So what are some other ways we can use this word conscious?
Well, I would say to be conscious of something.
Okay.
Right, like to be conscious of actually pretty much anything, right? Conscious of yourself, to be conscious of your position or your privilege.
Ooh, what about being conscious about recycling and conserving energy?
Oh, yeah, so that's kind of like a bit more of like a social, political consciousness.
Right.
Right, Diana is from a city called San Francisco, which happens to be, you know, one of the most liberal places in America.
Yeah.
People there, I think, would when we talk about that sort of consciousness, it's definitely recycling, driving a hybrid car.
Yes, exactly. So moving along, these habits can often occur without our permission, but can be reshaped by fiddling with their parts.
All right. Love this word. Fiddling.
Mm-hmm. So, what is this?
Well, I want to start with the violin, if I could. If anybody knows the instrument, the violin, some of you probably play it.
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference between a violin and a fiddle? there is no difference, except that when you play the violin, it's very beautiful, you know. When you play the fiddle, I mean, that's kind of a more like American style. You're just kind of, you're like playing with it almost. I guess you're playing music in the other sense, but you're having more fun kind of messing around with it.
Okay. So how do you connect this back to fiddle?
To fiddling? In the sense that, let's say something is broken, mm-hmm. And I don't really know how to fix it, I'll probably just kind of play around with it until it works.
Okay, all right.
So it's almost like adjusting in this sense, right? Like for example, when we were young and the TV signal wasn't very good, you might go and play with the fiddle with the wire a little bit.
Right.
Suddenly,
right.
Oh, hey, it works.
Right. I would even say another word is maybe tinkering.
Tinkering, yeah, exactly. These words, fiddling and tinkering, they all give me the impression of like a dad who doesn't really know how to fix things, but just, you know, just kind of hits it,
right.
or messes around with it until it works.
Uh-huh. All right. So habits are so strong that they cause our brains to cling to them at the exclusion of all else.
Okay. So cling to, like hold on.
Very tightly.
Really tight. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
For example, if you guys know what that clear wrap is, you put it over like leftovers.
Right.
It clings to your dish or your plate.
Sure. And even one of those, I mean, this thing is sold by many companies, but even one brand name is called Cling Wrap.
Right. All right. So the next quote we have, habits, scientists say, emerge because the brain is constantly looking for ways to save effort.
Emerge.
Appear,
come out of somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So because this is an advanced lesson, maybe we should take a moment to take these two words, emerge and appear,
mm-hmm.
and just kind of fiddle with them for a second.
Okay.
So what would you say is the difference?
Well, appear could be instantaneous.
Okay, like that.
Yes. Whereas emerge is going to be maybe slowly.
Mm.
For example, something emerged out of
the darkness.
Yeah.
Mm. I think about Godzilla emerging
goodness.
From the water, you know.
Oh, okay.
Oh, Godzilla, yeah. Godzilla.
Right, first you see his head.
Right, very slowly
then you see
coming
his body,
up.
Right.
And then lots of Japanese people are running away.
All right, so moving on to the third quote. If you want to do something that requires willpower, like going for a run after work, you have to conserve your willpower muscle during the day.
Okay, this is the first time I've ever heard something like this. A word like willpower, I've heard my whole life,
mm-hmm.
just basically means the strength of your...
Mind.
Yeah. Your will.
Yeah.
you know, of course, will is a verb. You know, I will do this. I will not do that.
Mm-hmm.
But it also is this kind of this thing that we have. You know, the ability to do things that we want to do. It's our will.
To do or not to do.
Or
something.
Not to do them. Exactly. Like one of the oldest questions in, you know, the West, Western history, Western theology is.
Mm-hmm.
Do humans have free will?
Right,
are we
right.
free to choose? Now, when you look at it from, you know, this point of view, like of, you know, the brain, the mind, and mm-hmm. habits.
Yeah.
Maybe you don't. Maybe you're not so free because, you know, your habits will control your willpower.
That's true. Now, what could we say about conserve?
Save. It means save.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't mean like save. Like you wouldn't really say conserve money.
Yeah.
I guess you could conserve resources.
Mm-hmm. But usually we think of this as in electricity.
Yes.
As water.
Yeah, energy.
Yeah, not actual money or
right.
cash.
And even the way he has formulated the sentence, like conserve your muscle. Like, I don't think you will ever say that or hear that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I like it. I like the way he's written that. But just when you use this word in day-to-day life, it's always going to be energy,
mm-hmm.
resources, time. Can you conserve time?
Probably not. I would always say save time.
Save time. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, any other ways we can use this word conserve?
Well, we could use it in the noun conservation.
Okay.
For example, in America, several decades back, there was this push to create national parks in kind of like a wildlife conservation effort.
Okay, yeah, conservation effort. You always hear those words together. Mm. And I guess wildlife conservation. We grew up, where I grew up, it was next to also like, it was called the nature conservation.
Okay.
But we just called it a conservation.
Right, right. All right, so those are the first three quotes. Let's go ahead and listen to the last two.
All right. It is facile to imply that smoking, alcoholism, overeating, or other ingrained patterns can be upended without real effort. Genuine change requires work and self-understanding of the cravings driving behaviors. Rather, to change a habit, you must keep the old cue and deliver the old reward, but insert a new routine. Okay, well, this next quote, I think, is kind of cool because he's really sort of changing, you know, the way we normally think about a lot of societal problems.
Mm-hmm, right.
So he says that it's facile to imply that smoking, alcoholism, overeating, or other ingrained patterns can, well, he goes on for a while here, doesn't?
Yes.
Lots of words we can talk about. I want to just quickly start with facile.
Okay. So facile is basically overly simplified.
Yeah, too simple, sometimes naïf.
Naïf, right. So it's basically reducing something to the point where you're explaining it away too simply, right?
Sure, sure, sure. So you might hear like a facile argument or facile case. In any case, you know, I mean, simple is also a pretty good word to use as well.
Right.
Now he's talking about another word here, implying or imply.
Okay, so imply means to kind of indirectly suggest.
Mm, you're saying something without saying it.
Yes.
And in a really indirect way.
Mm-hmm. So what is he implying?
Okay, so implying that smoking, alcoholism, overeating, or other ingrained patterns, he's talking about these things here, can be kind of, well, changed, which we'll get to in a second.
Okay. So ingrained means really firmly or deeply rooted.
Yes, it's firm. That is the word that comes to my mind.
Yeah.
Firm.
Yes. And it is always talking about your attitude or your belief or, like we said here, habit.
A habit, right. I think about like ingrained prejudices.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of prejudices that are very, very deeply ingrained.
We could also say that there are a lot of ingrained religious beliefs.
Yes, exactly. And don't forget about culture, guys. There are lots of things that are ingrained in your culture, in my culture, in everybody's culture.
Yes.
Not easy to change.
So, Adam, are there any other ways we can use ingrained?
Well, we've just been using it as an adjective, right? And you can use it as a verb. Like somebody can ingrain somebody else with something.
Mm-hmm.
So all of those things we just talked about, actually, like, you know, my teacher could ingrain me with a deep respect for conservation. You know, like my parents could ingrain me with a deep prejudice against people who are different.
Yeah, yeah. So he's saying that these ingrained patterns can't be appended without real effort.
Okay, so we finally got to the end of that sentence. not a super long sentence, but just a really, really dense.
Very complex.
Yes, exactly. So upended is, well, think about turning something upside down.
Mm-hmm.
A table, a bicycle, a person, I guess. but really, when we use this word, in day-to-day life, we don't really talk about
the literal use.
The literal use, right. It's more like upending tradition, upending, well, you know, deeply ingrained beliefs.
Right. So basically breaking.
Yes, exactly. Right? Exactly. But again, like if you're going to fix your bicycle and you need to turn it upside down, you're not going to say like, hold on while I upend my bicycle.
Yes. All right. So he says, genuine change requires work and self-understanding of the cravings driving behaviors.
Okay, genuine, real,
authentic. Yes.
Not fake.
Not fake. And now, what about cravings?
Cravings. Ooh, okay. So it's the stuff that you really want. You probably don't need.
Mm-hmm.
You just gotta have that cigarette or cola or whatever it is that you're addicted to.
Yeah. Well, it feels like you need it.
Yeah.
Right?
This is definitely, you know, a want as opposed to a need,
mm-hmm.
right? But just like Diana says, you know, it feels like you need it. I've got to have it.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't had a cigarette in, you know, 3 minutes. Oh, I got a craving here.
Right.
But it doesn't have to be so, you know, so bad. Like, it could be a craving for, you know, a double cheese pizza
mm-hmm.
or a craving for, you know, popcorn or something.
Yeah. Now, on to our last quote here. Rather, to change a habit, you must keep the old cue and deliver the old reward, but insert a new routine.
Okay, so he's kind of laid this out as just kind of like step one, two, three, right? So
mm-hmm.
the cue is something that kind of like signals you to do something.
Right. All right, so cue, this little word, can be used as both a noun and a verb.
Yes, exactly. So you can cue somebody, right? Or you can be cued.
Mm-hmm.
If you are an actor giving, you know, like lines on the stage and you forget your lines, somebody will be there to cue you.
Mm.
You know, Romeo, Romeo, what? You know, cue please.
Yeah.
And someone will just say, you know.
Right. Actually, a lot of actors do get cue cards.
Yes, it's true. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah. If you were in a television studio and looked beside the camera,
mm-hmm.
there's probably some intern holding a really big card that has all the words on it.
Exactly.
So again, in this case, you're not really being signaled, but it's the same sort of thing. Something is kind of, you know, without that, you would not be able to do what you are doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or, for example, I'm thinking of maybe a woman at the bar.
Mm.
Like, if she makes eye contact with a guy that she's kind of interested, and then she smiles at him.
Okay, that's a good cue.
That's a cue to go over and walk over and talk to her.
Right, or, you know, the opposite, right? I mean, if she folds her arms in disgust and kind of turns around, you know, like maybe that's a cue to go away or something.
Exactly.
But that's interesting because now we're getting into social cues.
Mm.
And there are so many social cues, I mean, limitless, really. And it's interesting for English learners specifically, like, or really any language learners, because it's not always so easy to explain social cues.
Mm-hmm.
And it might be different from culture to culture.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it.
Sure. So, like, I mean, if I'm just sitting here, like, staring at my watch, you know, like, I mean, that's kind of a cue that, all right, this is time to
mm-hmm.
wrap this up.
Right, right. And another example I think of in day-to-day life, if you are at a red light, you know, you have to stop.
Right.
But when you see the green light or if you see a green man, that means you can walk or you can drive, you can go.
Okay, so that's a cue?
Mm-hmm.
That's cueing you to go?
Yeah, it cues you to go.
Okay, interesting. There's one other phrase that I think of with cue, and that's on cue.
Oh.
And it's a phrase we use to just kind of mean like right on time.
Yeah.
Like, for example, I brought some food into the office, and Diana, right on cue, came running in like, hey, what do you guys have?
Right, exactly. All right, so I think that's about it for the first part of The Power of Habit. Let's go ahead and listen to all 5 quotes from the top.
All right.
Habits are powerful but delicate. They can emerge outside our consciousness or can be deliberately designed. They often occur without our permission, but can be reshaped by fiddling with their parts. They shape our lives far more than we realize. They are so strong, in fact, that they cause our brains to cling to them at the exclusion of all else, including common sense. Habits, scientists say, emerge because the brain is constantly looking for ways to save effort. If you want to do something that requires willpower, like going for a run after work, you have to conserve your willpower muscle during the day.
It is facile to imply that smoking, alcoholism, overeating, or other ingrained patterns can be upended without real effort. Genuine change requires work and self-understanding of the cravings driving behaviors. Rather, to change a habit, you must keep the old cue and deliver the old reward, but insert a new routine. Okay, so we've spent the past couple minutes talking about how habits are formed, a few kind of concepts that go into understanding what exactly habits are. We probably should talk about our own habits.
All right, would you like to go first?
Good or bad?
Up to you.
Okay, bad habit is smoking, obviously.
Okay.
I have some good habits, though, too.
Yeah.
I think the good habits go back to what we said before about consciousness.
Mm.
For example, I've been in China for 5 years, and I still sort my recycling.
Oh, good for you. Good for you.
Well, I mean, it's just, I don't know. It's just, it's a habit,
just
right?
A habit,
it's just
yeah.
like, I can't throw out this plastic bottle. Like, I can't throw that in the garbage.
Yeah.
If I were in Canada, like, they would come to my home and, you know,
beat
like,
you with the stick.
Well, they wouldn't quite beat me, but they might as well.
Yeah.
Like I remember last year I went home and somehow something got into my dad's recycling box and he lost his like gold star rating.
Aww.
And he was really upset about it, you know. So like
public shaming,
you know, you put this thing that you shouldn't have put in here. So I think that's a good habit that I do have. And what about you? Good and bad?
So a really bad habit of mine is that I often don't go to bed early enough. I'm, you know, a night owl. I like to owl you. I would say a better habit of mine is when I'm driving, and I don't really drive in Shanghai, but,
right.
you know, back at home when I'm driving, I always use my turn signal.
That's your bad habit?
It's a good habit.
Oh, sorry.
I hope that's a good habit.
Yeah,
I'm telling people where I'm going, you know, left
right.
or right. It just really, really pisses me off when people do not use their turn signal.
Yeah, it's super easy to do. It's an easy habit to get into.
All right, so now that we are done with part one of habits, why don't you guys tell us some of your good and your bad habits?
Yeah, be honest. I mean, we were both pretty honest with you guys just now.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, you know, since we're going to be talking more concretely about forming habits next time, maybe you can save, you know, the habits that you want to have. Save those for part two.
Mm-hmm.
For now, let's just talk about the habits that you already have.
Okay, yeah.
And just why are they good and why are they bad?
Mm-hmm, right. We look forward to your comments. And as always, we'll see you guys next time.
Too simple, sometimes naive. Bye, guys.
For more English podcasts, stay tuned to Kaya Inyu Mei Tian Ting.